Veterans Day is a civic holiday, not a religious one. It originated as a commemoration of the signing of the armistice, which brought World War I to an end. Of course, it wasn't called World War I at the time. Back then, it was usually referred to as the war to end all wars, or it was referred to as the Great War, great not in terms of something admirable or highly desirable. It was a great war because of its scope, involving so many nations, so much destruction, so high a number of combatant and civilian deaths. Veterans Day doesn't often fall on a Sunday, and what's particularly distinctive about this Veterans Day is that today marks the 100th anniversary of that moment on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, when 47 miles northeast of Paris, in the forest of Compiègne, pardon my French, German delegates met with Allied commander Ferdinand Foch, and they signed the armistice that ended the war. It was the poet and author Maya Angelou who was credited with saying, "How important it is to recognize and celebrate our heroes and our sheroes." So indeed, we recognize this morning those who donned the uniform of our country. It's appropriate to offer our gratitude, to express our admiration. Of course, we don't make them the focus of our worship because that's reserved for God alone through Jesus Christ. But still, I think we can learn something about the Christian faith from the example of our veterans. Because our nation's heritage has been built upon their sacrifices. We rub elbows with many of our military veterans as we go about our daily lives. Some veterans are whole and well, while others bear physical or emotional scars resulting from the trauma of their service. Some veterans are now deceased. Many lived out the fullness of their years, while some had their lives cut short while in service to our country. And of course, there are men and women serving today. Each week in our printed bulletin, we acknowledge those with ties to this congregation, those currently serving in our armed forces, future veterans, if you will. They are serving us as we sit here enjoying the freedoms this nation offers us. Because the society in which we live and breathe is the product of the legacy resulting from the sacrifices of our nation's veterans, combined with the courageous vision of our founding fathers and mothers, along with generations of public service by elected leaders. Our government is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. We cherish a free press with the mission of public service to inform and to hold accountable. Our freedom of association allows us to come to this place this morning without fear of intimidation or reprisal. And we can cross our state border into Pennsylvania or West Virginia or Kentucky or Indiana or Michigan without having to prove our identity or receive prior approval. Now, most of us, most of the time, take all those things for granted. But they are the legacy of the sacrifices made by our nation's military veterans, sacrificing months and years away from family and friends, sacrificing the comforts of home, sacrificing injury and illness, and in the case of 2.9 million men and women, losing their lives in service to America's ideals of liberty and justice for all. So with the image of our nation's veterans in mind, perhaps we can gain a new appreciation for what Jesus did for us in his life, and particularly in his death. As you heard from Bill a few minutes ago, the prophet Isaiah proclaimed a vision of what God wanted humankind to become. Isaiah described the unmatched majesty of God's will as being like a mountain towering over all the hills around it. And people would realize that God's way was so far superior to the ways of humankind. People of many lands would flock to it, do whatever it took to ascend that mountain so they could learn God's will for all people, to learn it, embrace it, and live according to it. And with God's will as their focus and not their own self-serving views, with God's will as their focus, they would discover that there was no more need for conquest and defense and war. They would hammer their swords into plows and their spears into pruning hooks. And to make this point even clearer to humankind, at a point in human history, God entered into the realm of human activity, becoming incarnate in Jesus of Nazareth. The Hebrew term Emmanuel describes this action by God very succinctly. Emmanuel means God with us. In the 3 years of his itinerant ministry, Jesus preached and taught and demonstrated what life looks like when we live according to God's will and not according to our all-too-human self-serving desires. In other words, in Jesus, we saw God. But there was still something holding us back from embracing God's will completely. And that was our fear of losing, of not having enough, fear of being taken advantage of. We knew what our worst selves are capable of, and we feared that someone else might act like that toward us. And so while we admired Jesus' ethic of compassion and justice, we weren't quite ready to make ourselves vulnerable by surrendering to him completely. Consequently, we can still act in self-serving, unloving ways. Not always, but sometimes. Mark Sandlin is a pastor at a Presbyterian church in Greensboro, North Carolina, and Mark's written that when we act in unloving ways, we distance ourselves from God, and that is the one and only sin, actions that separate us from God. At the heart of considering whether or not an action separates us from God is the question of love. Does this action come from a place of love? And that question brings us to the cross. Whereas Jesus said, no one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. Now, to be honest with you, we don't often talk about Jesus dying on the cross, unless we're in the season of Lent. But Christ's death on the cross is a central tenet of the Christian faith, right along with he was born of Mary, he was raised on the third day, he died on the cross. So you see, as Jesus pursued and encouraged an ethic of justice and compassion, that threatened the privilege and power of the political and economic and religious leaders of his day. Jesus knew that his commitment to living out of love would offend those who profited from injustice. Jesus knew that his compassionate actions would comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable, as the saying goes. And since the power brokers of his day didn't share his ethic of justice and compassion, they showed their worst selves by acting to protect their interests rather than consider the needs of other. Hence, crucifixion. Jesus lived a life of love. His unconditional love and mercy and forgiveness and generosity challenged the ways of the world, but he did it anyway. And in the way that our military veterans sacrifice a measure of personal freedom and precious time or their health or even their lives for their country, Jesus sacrificed his life because he was determined to show love in what he said and what he did. But because of his sacrifice, we saw God. We saw God's love. We saw God's will. We saw God's desire for humanity. Now, the Bible has a curious way of saying that. In the reading that you heard from Hebrews chapter 10, in verse 20, this is what we heard. The death of Jesus opened for us a new way, a living way, through the curtain, that is, through his own body. Through the curtain. Where'd that come from? What's that mean? Through the curtain. Well, it's a reference to the story of the crucifixion as told in Mark's gospel. And to understand that, first let me paint a very brief picture of ancient worship practices in the Jerusalem temple. The innermost chamber of the temple was called the Holy of Holies. It contained the covenant box, or you probably know it as the Ark of the Covenant, which you're familiar with because of what? Indiana Jones and the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark. Well, for the 40 years that the Israelites wandered in the wilderness, and before they built the temple in the Promised Land, their worship center was a portable tent, or tabernacle, that they could put up and take down as they moved from place to place. The Ark of the Covenant was basically an ornate, gold-encrusted box containing two copies of the Ten Commandments, a pot of the manna with which God fed the Israelites in the wilderness, and the walking stick of Aaron, the brother of Moses. The Ark, they say, was about 4 feet long, maybe 2 feet high and 2 feet deep. It was carried by men holding poles that slid through brackets on the four bottom corners of the ark. Well, eventually that portable tabernacle was replaced by a temple that they built in Jerusalem. And the Ark of the Covenant was placed in that innermost chamber, the Holy of Holies. Now, the Jews were very clear that the box was not God. That would have made it an idol, right? But the ark came to symbolize God's invisible enthronement on earth. And by the time it was placed in the Holy of Holies, the ark was considered so special that it was believed that you would die if you saw it. And so in the Holy of Holies, they installed a curtain in front of the Ark of the Covenant. And then when the temple's high priest made his once yearly offering inside the Holy of Holies, his life was spared because that curtain prevented him from seeing the symbolic presence of Almighty God. Now, to Mark's gospel. In chapter 15, verse 37, Mark states, Jesus died. The very next verse in Mark's gospel says this: the curtain hanging in the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. Now, if you didn't know about the Jewish temple's Holy of Holies and the Ark of the Covenant, that statement about a torn curtain would make no sense at all. But now we understand the symbolism. In his sacrificial death, Jesus revealed that God is love. The shroud of mystery is removed, the curtain is torn apart, and we see clearly through the sacrifice of Jesus that God is love, generous, unconditional love. It's not dependent on who we are or whether we're deserving. What Christ's sacrifice shows us is what love can look like when we try to live the way Jesus did. Love can look like healing people who are hurt. Love looks like feeding people who are hungry. It looks like loving people who are shunned. It looks like defending people who are overwhelmed. It looks like friends sharing food together. It looks like grieving over the loss of a friend. It looks like conversation over a drink of cool water. It looks like helping the celebration along at a wedding. It looks like helping the lost find meaning in life. Jesus' death showed us how far love will go and what love looks like when it's played out to the fullest.